Welcome to Under the Scales. We are in the traveling Under the Scales mobile studio, and we're actually not that far from my home, but I just came to this really cool farm, and I'm here with a pal, Garrett, who is a huge fish fan, but he's also a fantasy tour hero, but also anti-hero, villain. You were vilified, so you're a villain too, in a way.
Yeah, certain people find me that way,
it seems. So Garrett Phillips is also known as Plus Size Model, or PSM, on Fantasy Tour, and has some interesting stories, including running afoul of the law, right?
Yes, you could say that again.
And has always been known to me as kind of one of the old school Fantasy Tour gang that I sort of used to, you know, rub elbows with without knowing, you know, the face to the name, but always would laugh. You would make me laugh, and that's appropriate because I think, didn't you have sort of either a stand-up show or a radio show or something like that?
Yeah, I took a stab at stand-up comedy for a while, and until it became clear that it was way too hard to do, especially if you're only marginally funny. And I also did a morning radio show in Atlanta. I was a sidekick for that for about 6 months.
So are you an Atlanta person or a Richmond, Virginia person? Or where are you
from? I did 28 years in Atlanta. That was where I spent most of my adult life, and now I live in Richmond.
You even speak like a prisoner. You said, I did 28 years. Like, I did 28 years in Sing Sing.
Yeah. I guess that's an after effect. God knows there's probably more of them.
Well, we'll definitely, it's a part of your life, so we definitely have to cover that. But before that happened, before that experience occurred, you were a fish fan.
That's correct.
And how'd you get into fish, and were you like a dead fan first and all that stuff?
Yeah, it was the dead first. I saw 37 times starting in about 84, a Fox show in 84, and then mostly in the early 90s, late 80s. But I started seeing the fish stickers around dead shows, you know, just on cars.
Yeah.
And I was encouraged to go by a Trustafarian. I later found out he was a Trustafarian. That's kind of beside the point. But he begged me to go to the Roxy shows, the legendary Roxy shows from 92.
Yeah.
Which was 5 miles from my house. But I was tired from work both nights and just didn't go. This is when I was waiting tables. I was like, yeah, how great could this band be? So I missed the legendary Roxy shows.
Which we're going to play a little bit of right now.
Then I made up for it with my first show, which was 7/31/93 in Atlanta at the Masquerade Music Park, which is an outdoor facility of about 800 people, maybe.
Wow.
And I was sufficiently dosed for it. And the second set, the set list alone is crazy, but the second set went Mike's Song, Leprechaun, Week of Pog, Hold Your Head Up, and then Purple Rain, or Highway to Hell, Purple Rain, flipped some, I can't remember which, and then Encore Acapella Freebird.
Thank you.
And this, I had never heard them before, let alone seen them.
Right.
And at the end of that, I was just like, what did I just see? There was a dude, I swear there was a dude in a dress singing Purple Rain. I could have sworn I saw that. And
you and 800 other people.
Yeah. Luckily, there were people to confirm that. But, yeah, from there, there was nothing I could do. I'm like, I have to follow this band. I mean, right. I didn't go on the road, like, hardcore, like people I would work them in with trips to see family and so forth.
Right.
I never went all in doing entire tours before I got incarcerated. I was going to ready to go for plenty more shows before that the bust happened that summer of 2011.
Oh, well, so I think I know how you're going to answer the famous Marshall, where you stand on the famous Tom Marshall 300 shows line. You know, have you seen more, for whatever reason, I always ask, have you seen more or less than 300 shows? And if, you know, if you haven't seen more, why?
Yeah. Why? I ran into a little issue that took me off the road.
Got it. Do you know your actual number of shows?
Yeah, it was 85, 84.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
But that was pre-jail. Now, have you seen any since?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't because I got out in time to see the 14 shows literally 2 days before. I got out on Christmas Eve. Well, maybe it was 4 days before that Miami run in 14 commenced.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And I had plans the entire time while I was in, you know, several months leading up to my release, saying what a perfect thing to welcome me back into the world.
Right.
Then it turns out jail or prison adjusted my responsibility level to the point where I said, okay, I had a friend spot me $3,000 when I got out of prison to reestablish myself, get back on my feet.
And you didn't think it appropriate to spend $3,000 on fish tickets.
Right, or even well, several hundred.
Right, yeah.
You know, oh, thanks for the $3,000. I'm going to be in Miami for the week to chase this band.
So you're telling me prison works.
Yes, but on a number of levels.
It's
good experience.
Really? A good experience?
As it turned out.
Okay, all right, well, that's interesting. That's an interesting take.
My arch enemies on PT would be happy to learn that on the scale of liberal, say your most liberal is a 10 and most conservative would be a 1, I've definitely leaned, I'm towards 7 or 8 on the liberal scale now.
Because that bears mentioning, you were kind of, before Fantasy Tour, sort of this incredible division of PT cons versus PT libs occurred, you were kind of in the forefront of the con side.
That's right. I was a boisterous con, you would say.
Yeah.
A verbose.
Yes.
I could type quickly, and I didn't hesitate to do so. Multiple paragraphs in arguments with people and getting personal in response to them getting personal.
Right.
And then...
do you think that has anything to do with why Fantasy Tour was extremely excited to vilify you when they got the chance?
Definitely. But I'd hasten to say that's for the people that haven't met me, but as a rule, anybody I met that knew me only from my PT persona were blown away. They're just like, how could you be that guy?
Yeah. That's always the case.
That speaks back to how subtlety and inflection is lost in text.
Oh, absolutely. Well, also, I mean, just, you know, hiding behind an anonymous name, you conjure up the people who read the conversations conjure up an image in their head based possibly on the name and some of the hideous things you might be saying. And so mm-hmm. when they actually meet you, the fact that you possibly look like a normal human. I mean, I have cases, I'm not going to say their names, where I actually was sure that this person was going to be an absolute hideous monster and was just like a normal college dude, you know,
right.
Just like, wow.
Yeah. It is funny how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I mean, we've beat around the bush a little bit. Why were you vilified on Fantasy Tour?
Well, the triumph for PSM haters was my half-baked idea to blog a trip to Southeast Asia.
Yes.
Yes,
that's right.
Many would say whoremonger when that wasn't particularly what the case was.
Well, all right. Well, let me weigh in a little bit just from my point of view. You know, no one on Fantasy Tour really is morally... There's a moral average on Fantasy Tour that I would say is probably lower than society. And yet, on Fantasy Tour, the judgment is as if everyone is extremely moral.
That's right.
And why does that happen? I don't know. Again, the anonymous thing.
It's, yeah, that, and it's fascinating. Hookers and blow is just a saying on there.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's just this outrageous thing when...
If it actually does it.
Yeah. Which is kind of mind-blowing.
So you just said, all right, hookers and blow, that'll be okay, so I'll blog about it.
Right. It was a publicity stunt for one thing, you know, half-baked, needless to say. And I was just came off, two different things. My stint as a morning show sidekick that prompted me to, you know, I'd be broadcasting live, you know, doing live call-ins from a whore bar in Manila.
Whoa.
You know, or whatever. It might be interesting, you know.
Would you record that or would that be live somehow?
Live call-in, maybe. I don't know. Okay. We never got around to it.
I
say not around to it. In other words, the host said, fuck you, you know. We're not doing
that. We're not doing that.
This is not a good idea.
Okay.
So the whoremongering is like I was the first person to ever get a hooker. That's how it was presented. The whole genesis of that trip is I had a friend that turned me on to this site called nomarriage.com. And I'm in my early 40s. And I had just come off a fiance breakup and not really enamored with American women in general. And I was, at that point, I didn't really have a career. I don't have any money. You know, I was basically searching for answers, you know. And it seemed like nomarriage.com went into the materialistic aspect of American women and how it's much better to have a foreign wife that appreciates you, that isn't going to necessarily cost you. Basically, if you're a loser, this is what you want to do.
You're being radicalized as a loser.
Yeah. And I owned it. You know, I'm like, yeah, I got nothing going for me at this point. So what could it hurt? So I was back in the day, MySpace, you could basically search as if it was a dating site where you said, you know, I'm looking for a particular country, age span and whatever, and up came the profiles.
Okay.
So I set up dates doing that based on whether she was hot and whether she had good English, could write good English.
Okay.
So we'd be able to converse and whatever. And actually, honestly, thinking about finding a wife in the Philippines while I'm there, and pre-screening them via MySpace.
Okay, so Thailand, first of all, never happened. It was the Philippines. And so when you got over to the Philippines, did you meet these dates?
I went on three of them, all of which were duds. And in the meantime, I discovered that when you're a white guy from America in the Philippines, you are treated like a rock star. Basically, as in women come up to you consistently, like especially certain bars that are stocked with prostitutes, notorious bars, you are a rock star. You walk in there and they're swarming on you, literally.
Well, also because they're prostitutes and are looking for a paycheck.
That's right.
I mean, they want to be paid.
That's right, which it's still, regardless of that, it's not a bad place to be when you're, yeah, like I said, a self-described loser, more or less. What it came down to is I ended up falling for a girl that just met me at the mall, just came out of nowhere. She wasn't even a hooker or one that I had lined up.
Okay.
And that was the one, do not touch me as I sleep. That's the most famous quote that's probably been mistaken for something other than what it was.
Something weird. That was that something that the girl said or was that something that you said?
That's what I said to her, because at that point I was so jet lagged and sleep deprived. Literally, I hadn't slept in days, it seemed like. And I was so tired. And she was spending the night with me. And right when I get to sleep, repeatedly, she'd touch me and wake me up. And I'd tell her.
You sounded normal up until this moment.
I'd tell her. People, I have a feeling people think I'm on a throne. like speaking down to her, "Do not touch me," as I sleep. But it was out of desperation.
But also out of language language barrier.
I think that might have been part of it. She spoke great English though, but okay. I spelled it out literally because I was desperate for her to stop touching me so I could get some shut eye.
So everything you did there was above board. And I think some
probably not to a church goer.
Oh, right. Oh, right. Right. Okay. No, but as far as legal decorum, and also the reason that sometimes, like Thailand in particular, I believe falls into sort of this weird category, people are looked at askance when they come back from there, is because possibly the legal age there is less than the legal age here. So you can fall into this weird category where if that's your thing, you can legally get someone who's under the age legally here. And it does not sound to me that that's what you were into at all.
No, that was never the goal.
Okay, good. Because that is, to me, a little weird. And also, that is kind of the way that you were being portrayed on Fantasy Tour. So I'm relieved that you, apart from the "do not touch me as you sleep," which is a little unusual and yet understandable that you were tired. It sounds like you were, you know, fairly normal American enjoying life in the Philippines.
Yeah, okay. That's basically what I came with. Thanks for letting me clear the air.
Sure. And so now you came back and you were enjoying fish and you were supplementing your income with illegal activity?
Yeah, well, what happened was my mom passed away she had a 4-month bout with lung cancer and passed away in 2009, November. And during her caretaking time, you know, as she was loaded down with painkillers, they just gave her every painkiller under the sun.
Right.
And some she agreed with and the rest of them were extra. Right. Laying around, I mean, fentanyl patches and on and on and on.
And you kind of saw
liquid
them.
Liquid morphine, whatever.
And they're expensive.
Yeah, they're expensive. And the experience of having your mom die like that is expensive to your psychology. You know, yes. I wanted to kill the pain. It sucked horribly emotionally.
Right.
So I was like, okay, here's all these pills and shit. Start eating them. Next thing you know, I've got a habit that I've got to support and blah, blah, blah. While she was alive, there's no way I would have gone into dealing drugs other than maybe getting a sack and splitting it with three friends or whatever, you know, or something like that. I never got into drug dealing at all. But now that she's dead, you know, worst case scenario, I go to prison, but at least I'm not breaking my mom's heart in that case.
I see.
And this is before I thought through what all the downsides of prison. But so, yeah, throughout this dealing phase, I was never fully cognizant or whatever, you know, it was an opioid haze.
Wow.
Not to make excuses. I was still.
No.
But no. That was the backdrop of it.
So, okay. And then it that we're skirting around a little bit is that you actually began dealing a variety of drugs.
Yeah.
And that support first to support your habit, but then also just because it was making you money.
I was basically broke and trying to make money and make, you know, a retirement fund and go legitimate, have a company, buy a company with my proceeds. I had a plan to quit at a certain time, but I didn't get anywhere near the level where I wanted to quit.
I understand.
I could quit.
Right. And so that led up to a bust, of course.
Yes, sir. That was a Asheville widespread panic. I know a lot of people right now would say, well, that's what you get for following WSP, right? So I met this guy the week before this Asheville show, this weekend run that widespread had. The week before that was further in Atlanta. And a friend of mine from the late 90s who I'd seen a couple shows with, I hadn't seen since then. This is 15 years later, and he comes out, well, 12 years later, he comes up and says, hey, what's going on, you know, blah, 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 we're catching up, and he says, listen, I'm really down on my luck, because I said, hey, I've got great Molly here if you want some, you know, and he's like, no, I don't have any money, but you know what, if you want me to, I'll sling for you, I'll sell it for you while we're here, and because I really need money, and I'm like, okay, that's cool, you know, had no reason to think I couldn't trust him.
So at this point, you had a lot, and you were distributing it at fish shows, at concerts, at Further Festing.
Yeah, I had the Firemost powder out of Santa Cruz that was being shipped to me in ounces at a time.
Oh my God!
And what happens is that day goes fine, and everybody's happy. I'm ready to go to Widespread that next weekend. A friend of mine pulls out of that trip, and my buddy calls, who I just met again.
Yeah.
Says, "Hey, do you mind if I go with you?" And I'm, you know, I'm seeing dollar signs in my head. I'm like thinking, "Well, yeah, if this, he slings for me there, that's however many thousand more."
Right.
And I'm like, "Sure, come on." And on the way up, looking back, we didn't strategize how to do it, which is, you don't go into a strange town and hit the parking lots. You go to hotels, the higher end hotels that the obvious concert goers are showing up, and you solicit them by the elevator in the hallways of the hotel or whatever.
Safer, you mean?
It's, yeah, under that obvious commotion. Yeah, okay. That's, and I assumed he knew that.
Okay.
He did not know that. And he got popped. That's another misconception that I sold to an undercover. I was in a bar this whole time setting up prearranged, taking care of prearranged stuff. He got popped in the parking lot, flipped on me immediately. And then when I got back to the hotel room after the show, opened the door and there's four uniformed cops there.
Waiting for you. How was the show?
I go face down into a pillow top mattress. Whoa. Being cuffed. Which, if you're going to be cuffed and roughed up on a pillow top mattress.
You recommend the pillow top?
Yeah.
It's the best. It looks better than asphalt.
It felt better as well.
Not to make light of it, but what show was that?
Widespread, that was 4-8.
Okay, Widespread.
11.
Okay. Now, had you been, you'd been at
the show sucked, by the way.
You'd been in fish scene, you've been at various, just whoever kind of came by through your neighborhood. You weren't following a band in particular at that point.
No, but I had big plans for fish, sure, in that summer, but.
Right.
Anyway.
So you wrote a book about your experience.
I did.
Is that about your experience inside or getting there or?
Well, the first 20% is background.
And we covered that.
Talking about drug dealing, the nuts and bolts of it, and the 80% of it's the prison story. The one thing that got me, the mandatory minimum, that's why I ended up doing 35 months. That's what I got out of this.
Oh, my God.
First time offense, 35 months.
Whoa.
And it turned out Asheville, you would think the granola liberal aspect of Asheville would work in your favor in that situation.
Yes.
I came to learn there was a hard driving DA there that was an anti-drug crusader who got voted out after I went into prison, I might add. But that's neither here nor there. But
a red state isn't the best place to be busted for drugs in general.
Yeah, even though it's a granola portion of it.
Right.
That didn't help me.
Right.
So,
not that I'm advocating going to blue states and dealing drugs.
Right. Probably not a good idea in general. I wouldn't recommend it.
So did the gentleman, in quotes, air quotes, who got you busted wind up in prison himself as well?
He got 3 years of probation.
Okay.
For it, so he didn't get popped.
And so what happens then? You get...
The point, go back slightly, the only reason I was over the mandatory minimum sentence law, the only reason I had that kind of weight, that amount on me, was because, this is ironic, because my supplier in California, she was sending them an ounce at a time, which would keep me under the limit, which was 28 grams, I believe, which is mandatory minimum threshold. But the week before, because I was always on time and called her when I said I would and paid on time and everything, she's like, "Here's 4 ounces, pay me when you can."
Whoa.
Fronted it.
Whoa.
Or three of them anyway.
Okay.
So because I was trustworthy, That's why I was over the threshold.
Oh my gosh.
Which really, that I thought about that multiple, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about that little detail.
Right.
I had a lot of time to think about it too.
Had you not been such a good dealer, you wouldn't have had that much product.
That's how it works.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess so. Well, and you didn't think in your head even once of rolling over on her, I guess.
No, that was out of the question. That I told my lawyer that right away. He said, well, look, they got you red-handed. I mean, they really did. The hotel room was full. He took him right to the stash. My buddy took him right to the stash. My prints are all over everything.
Right.
But so my lawyer said, well, either you're going to, if it was federal, I don't think they even cared because she was in California.
I
told them that much.
And this was a state charge, not a federal
right.
charge. Okay.
So
if it was federal, though, you would have had the option to possibly talk.
Probably.
And is that, in general, not a good idea also?
I know. I never would have done that.
Right.
I mean, it's just one of those things.
One of those things. And then if you do preserve the person's name, you don't mention and you start doing time, do they kind of, in a way, owe you something either when you get out or when you're in? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, old school mobsters, or the way it used to be, if you get popped, like, say, the guy that ratted on me taken the heat and went to jail, I would have supported him the whole time he was in there. I would have gone out of my way to make sure he had money.
I see.
I even would have probably hired a lawyer for him in the whole nine, you
I
know,
see.
Because that's just... what's up.
I see. So the person above you, if you don't rat, tend to support you.
Right.
Okay.
And she would, but in her defense, she's in California, so there's not a, you know, it's not, she could have sent me money. She could have sent me money to my account and whatever, or
okay.
offered to do anything, but she didn't know
okay.
that.
Interesting.
Which sucked.
Right. And this is a weird question because I don't know how this stuff works, but did you contact her ever since you've been out?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I'm
not sure why you would, but I was just wondering.
Well, just a bitch and say, hey, what's up, man?
Yeah.
How do you leave me hanging? You knew.
Right. Well, that's what I was wondering, kind of. But
I called and warned her and everything. You know, you'd think
yeah.
at that point she says, well, let me know if there's anything I can do. I'll definitely move. But whatever.
Well, you've revealed at least that she's a she.
She was hot, too, which is really strange. But anyway.
So now you get into... You get into the system, and it's your first time offense.
Right.
And even without Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General, you got 35 months?
35.
What the hell? Did you plead guilty, or did you...
Yeah, I pled guilty. There was not... They had me dead to rights.
So you couldn't really fight it?
No. I mean, I could have if I would have more money, probably, because there may have been a loophole with the search warrant shenanigans. Like, they may have checked the room before they had the warrant. But that would have taken investigative. The lawyer, as it was, cost me $10,000, and that was all I had, basically, more than I had.
Wow.
And then he was like, another $10,000, and we can investigate that. And I was like, well.
Can't do it.
That's not.
So in you went. And do you start, like, at one type of prison and then move to another? Is there, like, a temporary holding prison as your trial's going on, and then you finally get wound up in the final one, or is that all just stuff I've gotten from movies?
The trial, there was no trial, really. It was just me saying guilty, and then he just gave me the sentence. Then from there, I got kicked out of the world into the corrections, which was 2 weeks in county jail in Asheville, and then the prison system for the rest of the time. And I was lucky to only have 2 weeks in jail. I mean, jail is way worse than prison. And people spend months or even years waiting on their trial, or months just to get transferred into the prison system. And the difference is night and day if you're going to a minimum security like I did, which isn't like Oz-like violence and so forth, controlled movement. Minimum security is more like a really bad church weekend getaway, adult daycare kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Where the annoyance isn't bodily harm, but it's annoyance via loud talkers when you're trying to read your book.
Or, for 35 months.
Yeah, or waking you up when you don't want to be woken up.
Oh, geez. And do not touch me when I sleep.
Yeah, that should, I should have put that as I say. I should have put that as a sign. But that was my one of my nicknames was Lockback, because I spent so much time on my bed. Because one of the punishments in jail, if you, for transgressions, was to be locked back when everybody else got to go out for to wander around during free time.
Right.
But I was voluntarily locked back. My cell door was open, and I was still lying on my bed reading. So they started calling me Lockback.
Lockback. Okay, so that's a thing that happens like for punishment, but one of the least severe punishments is that you get recess taken away, so to speak.
That's basically what I want.
You did that voluntarily because you felt like reading rather than chill with your fellow.
And then another nickname I had was Look It Up.
Look It Up?
Because I was a Scrabble bully. A veritable bully on the Scrabble board. And they'd just be like...
That's not a word.
They would talk to each other. yeah. And I'd say, look it up. Game's over, look it up.
Because you knew it was a word and they didn't know the word. I see. Okay, look it up. Interesting. Well, I always relish the opportunity to edit in some music into my episodes. And apart from the one or two that we mentioned earlier, what were some of your favorite fish shows that you recall? And what are your favorite fish songs? And
well, the wedge has always been my favorite song, I think.
Nice.
And I was telling you about the trip up here. As soon as I hit the highway, Rift goes in the player.
Oh, that's your travel music.
Yeah.
So
to start off any road trip.
Okay.
And I would recommend it to every fish fan if you haven't done it. Throw Rift in as you hit the freeway ramp. And it extends out perfectly for a road trip, just song at one song after the other.
So that very first song, Rift, I can imagine, like, if you're on the freeway, that, you know, you can step on the gas pedal pretty hard.
Yeah, it's easy to go 85. And Shocked and Persuaded Your Soul to Ignite.
Ah, when that happens, what happens? Do you ignite? Do you... Yeah, into the fast lane at that moment.
Any road trip
afterburners.
Yeah, anytime any road trips, it's your soul is shocked and persuaded to ignite and
silence contagious in moments like these.
Consume me and strengthen my will to appease
the passion that sparked me one terrible night.
And shocked and persuaded my soul to ignite.
Off you go on your road trip, and it goes on and on after that. Every song seems to fit.
Well, Take the Highway to the Great Divide.
Yes.
Clearly. And that's your favorite song, you say?
Yeah, with that beat and that,
some ludicrous... I read later a ludicrous explanation by me about what that song was about, and I said it was the aquatic ape theory of evolution. So, but it actually is, in a way. I did write it after reading about this theory that the reason that we have like salt in our tears that exactly matches the pH of the ocean, we started as organisms that crawled out onto the land, but then the theory is that we also then went back into the water, which explains why dolphins have hips. Why would a fish-like animal need hips?
Uh-huh.
Well, because we there's a part of our evolution where we actually spent time close or back in the water from being on land. And so part of that weird, probably proven false, branch of our evolution was the aquatic ape theory. And so after reading about this wackiness, I wrote the song The Wedge.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. So it's not really about it, but it there's a component of the aquatic ape theory in The Wedge. And I just thought I'd tell you that since it's your favorite song.
We're bobbing on the surface and a shadow glides below. This issue feels my heartbeat. Oh, but how I'll never know. That it's the ocean flowing in our veins. Oh, that it's the salt that's in our tears. Oh, 'cause we could have come so very far. Oh, in at least as many years.
Now, is the wedge in your top? How do you look at songs? Are they all like children that you can't pick your favorite, or is the wedge in the conversation?
Oh, it's there for sure. Yeah.
Does it have a lot to do with what music ends up being put to it, or does it? Is it all lyric based? What your favorite is?
Oh no, it's definitely the final result.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's loads of poems I've written that never took the leap into songdom, that to me just they just sit, you know, in a pile of paper.
Uh-huh.
And you can't call them a favorite song because they're not a song. There's things Trey and I have written that haven't made the leap, the second leap, or actually the third leap, into fish songdom, which are amazing, and I think they should be fish songs. His memory is really amazing, and 20 years after writing a particular song, he'll say something along the lines of, "And Tom, you know song X, I've been thinking about it a lot lately."
Oh, really?
And often he'll, if you're on the phone with Trey, you'll hear a guitar because he has one strapped to him, and he'll play it. And this is a song from 20 years ago that I've completely forgotten. And then, weird things happen, like on Big Boat, a song called, which I, in my band, Amphibian, called Thunderclap.
A flash of light, another moment, stolen from my soul. A thunderclap, I must surrender all control.
Running Out of Time, that appeared. And that was one of those probably 15, 16-year-old songs.
Wow.
Yeah.
A flash of light, another moment stolen from my soul. A thunderclap, again I must surrender all control. Sudden noises startle me and strange things in my mind haunt me and I'm running scared. Running out of time. Running out of time.
Yeah, so Trey has a memory for these. So some of them that are, I consider, my favorites might not be accessible to the public yet.
Okay.
But of the songs that are my favorite, yeah, The Wedge, it's up there. I'd say, album-wise, Rift is really in the top three for sure.
Yeah, Billy Breathes.
Up there too, yes.
Phenomenal album.
And then I have this weird Undermined, Round Room kind of, maybe I merge them into one. Where I love those songs. I just love those songs.
I do too. I've always been up, wish they'd play more of them. I know a lot of people do. Wanted to hear more Pebbles and Marbles all the time.
Yes.
Instead of TTE, the last third of TTE, which is basically like Pebbles and Marbles as far as I'm concerned. Why not just play Pebbles and Marbles?
Right. Well, there's also like this like Seven Below. There's like this era that like before the big, the 2.0 to 3.0 era of Fish, that big hiatus, to me, left a lot of songs that they were just starting to play.
Yes,
on the table.
Thank you.
Kind of on the table, yeah.
That's right, they're forgotten somehow.
They're kind of forgotten, like Anything But Me, and there's
Walls of the Cave.
There's a bunch. But, as everyone always says, and everyone knows about Fish, is they like forging forward.
Yes. And that's why we love them. That's part of the reason. You take the genius with the however they want to run it.
Absolutely. Well, Garrett, it's always a pleasure to catch up with an old fantasy tour buddy, and always a pleasure to talk to any Fish fan. Is there anything that you wanted to let us know, for example, the title of your book and when it's coming out?
Oh, yeah. It's Look Out for Shorts. you can go to lookoutforshorts.com. And the way you can remember that is based on one of the revelations I had in prison, which is, that's referring to dudes smoking. Smoking's illegal in prison, in theory.
Okay.
As the guard at my intake put it, my initial orientation speech, he said, tobacco is illegal on all North Carolina state property, but we do ask if you're going to smoke, take it back to the weight pile and keep it there. Don't smoke in the dorms. So it was de facto legal, but de facto, you know, it wasn't. It was a cat and mouse game constantly with the guards and the inmates. So they would be smoking in the boys' room, as it were. Not that there's a girls' room there. And with a lookout to make sure no guards were coming. And the lookout was paid in shorts, which is what they called the roach, the final almost smoked cigarette. So he was looking out.
And that had value too?
He was looking out for shorts.
That slime covered, soggy, filter part of the cigarette.
Not filter. They're roll ups. And it's a black at that point with nicotine and tar.
That's disgusting.
Oh, thoroughly disgusting.
And yet still sought after.
Oh yeah.
Is it folklore, or it sounds like it's not, that cigarettes are kind of currency there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Really? Tobacco.
Really?
Or yeah, all kinds of stuff is currency there.
So Look Out for Shorts by Garrett Phillips.
Yeah, there's a website, lookoutforshorts.com, and it's in the works. There's an excerpt of the opening of it on there right now, and I'll post more as they're perfected or whatever.
Okay.
You want to talk about some PT stories real quick, or are we out of time?
Oh yeah, you were famous for an incredible thread.
Yeah, the PT 100.
Yes,
that was a controversy. That probably added to my hate too.
Yes,
the PT 100 people that weren't on there carried a grudge forever.
Right, I remember. Probably. I remember. You know, it was like the 100 PTers that sort of mattered, but it was just like I would say like. Six of them, you know, actually were people that you interacted with, and the rest you kind of randomly just put on there.
Yeah. It started with like 30 people. I wanted to make a list of appreciation for 30 people that I really dug on there.
Right.
Because I was really grateful. I had a great time on there.
Yes.
And then it became, you know, there was, you know, I probably saw the Time 100 people. But
so whatever. You made it the PT 100.
Yeah.
And I remember, I hate to confess this, but I remember scanning for my name, Simple Twist, and I was extremely happy that I made it.
That thing took a life on it of its own. It was hilarious. But who was I wasn't even really a veteran at that point. I was like a year into it,
but that became your credibility, just the fact that you made it.
Well, I 499 I think multiple times. Yeah. from the
yes, 499ing being of course exceeding the maximum thread post count in a thread. And that's like something you strive to do. That means you had a popular thread. Those were the old days. I really did have a lot of friends, and I count you among them, where we interacted solely on Fantasy Tour without knowing anything about each other.
Right.
And I still do. There's a couple out there I haven't met, you know? Eventually you do meet them all.
It's a yeah. Well, if you're Tom Marshall, anyway.
I guess.
But
I guess.
It's always fascinating. I love meeting PTers.
Yeah, yeah. That was an incredible run. That was an incredible era.
It was.
Well, I would exhort you, Garrett, to come start seeing fish again, and I hope you come to the New York shows.
I Baker's plan Dozen. On it.
Okay, good, because you've had a long enough break now.
I have.
And you've been rehabilitated, so I think you can come back now. And it's been great to meet you, and thanks so much for coming up to the Princeton, New Jersey area.
Oh, it's a delight. Yep. What a great place.
Yep.
Thanks
great
for the tour.
Absolutely, man. Great to meet you. And thanks, and we'll see you next week.